The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but even if you were to concede the evidence of nature providing massive evidence for the existence of some kind of God, that would not automatically prove that God is the God of the Bible, would it? My friend, you are absolutely right. It would not automatically prove that. However, a great case can be made. Welcome to our sanctuary. A sanctuary for skeptics and doubters where doubt is not viewed as a four-letter word, and those with honest questions about Christianity are treated with respect. 2 weeks ago, I offered evidence for the existence of some kind of God. I didn't conclude it last week because I had a guest on. So today I will advance that argument forward, showing the likelihood that this God is in fact that God which Scripture proclaims. First, the latest news. And while we look at news, if you've followed this program for any length of time at all, you have noticed that my tone is different when I discuss politics, much different than my tone regarding the Bible. While I am friendly and respectful while talking to honest Bible skeptics, at least I try very hard to be, I pull no punches when talking about lying, hypocritical politicians. It's a whole different reaction from me. I admit this freely, without apology. Jesus himself spoke much differently to hypocritical leaders than he did to the average populace. And let me start today by having a little fun. Before looking at news in the present, let's look at a possible news headline from the future. A news headline in the future we should be prepared to see. The movie Alien is being re-released under the title Undocumented Worker. On to news from the present. Hold on to your seats. The unpredictable, free-thinking Mitt Romney, who considers himself the standard bearer of the GOP, has openly proclaimed that he will not endorse Trump in 2020. Speaking for myself, I'm stunned, shocked, and flabbergasted. Now, pretending for a moment that anybody even cares or anybody thinks that Trump needs his endorsement, I do want to remind us that moral Mitt had no problem accepting Trump's endorsement in 2018 when he ran for senator and actively sought his endorsement when he was a presidential candidate in 2012. Of course, many people want to take President Trump's place at the White House. On the debate stage Thursday, Beto O'Rourke, in responding to a question about gun control, he said, "Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15. Congressman Briscoe Kane, a member of the Texas House of Representatives, responded with a tweet that has since been taken down by Twitter. It said, "My AR is ready for you, Robert Francis." Okay, look, Kane's comment was clearly meant to be a joke. Whatever a politician, crooked or otherwise, feels like doing inside or actually does behind the scenes covertly, no congressman in his right mind is going to purposely make a public death threat. Give me a break. And obviously, everybody knows that should this idiotic law ever pass, Beto himself would not have been the one coming to the House to confiscate your guns. making the insinuation of Beto being personally threatened even more ludicrous. While Beto doesn't exactly amaze us with his intelligence, it is difficult to believe that he truly feels threatened. Both his reaction and the original comment at the debate were undoubtedly designed to gain more attention in a race for the White House where he is receiving microscopic support in the polls. Be that as it may, Beto has even reported this to the FBI. In these days of oversensitivity and pea-brained reactions to words, it would probably have still been wiser for Kane not to write the tweet. He can say it was a joke till he turns blue in the face. People will still believe whatever they want to believe. And opposing politicians salivate over an opportunity to exploit something like this. Kane would have been better served to comment on Beto without the joke. After all, Beto himself is enough of a joke. Having said that, well, you can read all kinds of headlines with the words death threat regarding Kane's tweet. Here is something you have not likely heard up to now. I happened to catch it just once on Fox News yesterday morning when they did an interview with Kane. The congressman is now receiving real death threats as a result of his tweets. Did you know that? Interesting. A defender of the Second Amendment gets pillaged by the media for a joke. Meanwhile, some so-called peaceful people who oppose guns have no problem issuing real, honest-to-goodness, serious death threats, and the mainstream media is virtually silent. That's our latest report regarding the age of idiocy. The age of enlightenment is gone. So is the age of reason. The age of idiocy is upon us. But here's a very quick review. Even people who claim God does not exist live as though he does exist. This is because they attach meaning and value to their lives. But if life came into existence by accident, there would be no such thing as meaning or value. Meanwhile, our conscience telling us how to treat human beings verifies that humans have rights, but right and wrong would be the mere opinions of accidental creatures if there were no God. Toward the end of that program, we began to move on. You may recall that I said a good case could be made for the biblical God, but only after we establish God's nature. When doing so, we will conclude that God, whoever or whatever he is loving and good. And you'll recall that I kind of quoted from an imaginary skeptic. I say imaginary, but this is all based on things I've heard from real conversations, talking with college students across the country for years. So our rhetorical skeptic at that point said, loving and good, didn't you leap to that conclusion rather hastily? Well, we learn about an artist from his artwork. Does it not make sense that creation would tell us a few things about God? How can we explain any noble human qualities apart from the source of life? Well, Bob, now you're going to checkmate your own argument. You stated earlier that we do not completely submit to our standards. Does our evil come from God as well? Excellent question. Human beings observe good and evil in themselves and good and evil in the world. Life appears to be a paradise invaded. The world is both a wonderful place and a terrible place at the same time. On one hand, we can enjoy beautiful lakes, lavish forests, breathtaking sunsets. Unfortunately, we also witness blizzards, earthquakes, and fatal diseases. This contradictory tension is equally apparent in the human species. Just as people love and create, they hate and destroy. Quite a riddle indeed. Some would assume from this phenomenon that God is not totally good. Such a conclusion is very understandable, but the theory does not completely hold up. Remember, our conscience and intuition tell us that people should be good and that life should be good. Can we assume that we are better than our Creator? Of course not. An inferior being does not invent a superior being. Maybe you never stop to think about it, but a complaint about evil in relationship to God is simply another way of saying, I'm a better person than God is. Folks, our Creator at the very least will realize the same things that we do. He is fully aware of how life should be. As God, he is also in the supreme position to do something about this truth. In other words, the Creator of all life will not act contrary to his own standards. Yeah, but Bob, supposing the creator is both good and evil. After all, people are both good and evil. Is this not the most likely possibility? Or perhaps we have two co-creators, a good one and a bad one. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no principle beyond God. We already established the relationship between morality and personality. Good and evil are not entities in themselves. They are choices and thoughts. It makes no sense to say that God would choose evil and choose good at the same time. The inward awareness of accountability tells you that God expects people to live a certain way. This revelation is based on a divine decision. To say that God is also evil is to make God undecided in the standards he wanted to establish. This would invalidate any reason to hold men and women accountable. Why would God create a conscience that condemns murder if he were uncertain how he himself felt about murder? It would be a contradiction for God to say that evil was occasionally preferable or justified. If such were the case, evil would not be evil. Evil would be an opinion. Your conscience points to an awareness of God's opinion regarding standards. Such an opinion is ultimate reality. As our creator, he holds the sole authority to establish such ideas. A co-creator is also an unlikely possibility. In such a case, neither being will have the exclusive claim to authentic judgment. If a co-creator decides that evil is permissible, people are, as products of two divinities, will find themselves in a state of moral neutrality. This once again leads to relative rules and a confusing life. We would also conclude that an evil God is not really evil. He is instead a timeless being who chose a different code of ethics. As one of two eternal entities, his decision goes unchallenged. Since the good God is an equal, not a superior, even he must remain silent. Both gods will therefore confess a difference of viewpoint. At the first appeal to common ground, they are acknowledging principles of a higher order. Since that cannot be, the gods concede a stalemate. There is no hope for the so-called correct standards. Good will never prevail. On what basis would the moral God communicate to his creatures that good should prevail unless he wanted to lie? More of this when we return to the Bob Segal Show.
Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
1170 AM, 96.1 FM. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. 2 weeks ago, I made a case, kind of a philosophic case, for the existence of God. And now we're trying to advance that to see if he's the God of the Bible. If we can establish that God is loving, we can move very quickly to the Bible. We haven't established that yet, because one of the arguments for the existence of the God is the conscience. But a lot of times people say to me, well, yeah, but human beings are also evil. So maybe there's two gods, a good one and an evil one. And I pointed out that good and evil would just be their opinions if they're gods, because there's nothing higher than them. So neither one of them could say, my opinion's the right one. And at what point would the so-called good God tell us that good should prevail? I ended the last segment by saying, on what basis would this moral God communicate to his creatures that good should prevail unless he wanted to lie? And if he lied, he would not be good himself. What would be the final result? Everlasting, frustrating chaos, which forces us to abandon our earlier conclusion that life had meaning. And for reasons already mentioned, this is not an option. And of course, there's another obvious question to ask. For what possible reason would a good and evil God collaborate in creation anyway? A God who is truly good will never cooperate with evil. In the final analysis, the only sensible explanation for your conscience is one God who made an unquestionable decision. We do not know why his nature desired such a choice. So you're thinking, well, even if we throw out the evil God, does that mean there is only one righteous eternal creator? It does, as a matter of fact. Two eternal beings agreeing on purpose and morality would have to appeal to higher principles. And higher principles, once again, cannot exist apart from personality. One God need not appeal to anything. He just is what he is. Well, Bob, why assume that God is eternal? Couldn't a finite God have created a finite universe? Yes, possibly, but even if our God is not infinite, an eternal creator would still be out there somewhere. We established earlier that an eternal personality must exist. Once establishing an eternal God, we recognize the possibility that he just created us directly. In fact, it becomes highly questionable why he would use a middleman. Nevertheless, to maintain an open mind, we will simply conclude at this point that with or without a finite God, the infinite God is alive. Well, then, could our hypothetical finite creator be evil? Well, no, because the eternal God will not act contrary to his goodness. Therefore, we assume that the finite God, if he even exists, was created to be loving and good. Yeah, Bob, but could not the finite God have fallen into evil choices? Men and women fell into evil choices. Yes, potentially. That the infinite God, because of his nature, would not let such a being hold his creation accountable to standards he himself does not even follow. For that would not be fair to the third party. Our moral imperfection can only be measured against the standard of moral perfection. In summary, a finite creator, by contrast to the infinite creator, is not truly God and our ultimate source of life. Therefore, there is an eternal God out there. It is this God to whom I refer to for the rest of this time. Once God reveals more of himself, he would let us know whether or not any middle finite helper exists. And of course, in the Bible, they do make it clear that there are no other gods. But at this point, we're trying to back up and be philosophical and say, even apart from the Bible, how much could we conclude about God? But Bob, if morality was established by God, could I not just disagree with his establishment? Well, that question is irrelevant because you were created in such a way that you do not disagree. You disobey, but you do not disagree. But is this really goodness? Yes, because the author of life says so. There can never be a more final decision. Remember, there was a time when only God with his personality and morals existed. Since he created everything, it is impossible to find a legitimate basis with which to challenge him. Now, the establishment of a loving God supplies many additional conclusions because there are many things a loving God would do and many things a loving God would not do. We can now test different religions to see if they are indeed talking about a loving God. I'm going to define religion tonight as an alleged truth about our existence, allegedly revealed from some type of higher order. These various belief systems should be compared to the following expectations. First of all, if the Creator is loving, the Creator will reveal himself to people. Why do I say that? I am frequently amazed at the typical assumption that God would be doing something out of the ordinary by speaking with his own creation. Certainly God is capable of communication, otherwise we would not be capable either. Is it conceivable that a moral God would withhold such contract? Would it not be cruel for him to create us for a reason and then not let us in on the secret? I created you for a reason, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. Okay, a search for meaning apart from some type of religion leads only to the dead end of despair. A loving God would not delight in such emptiness. If meaning and value are found only in the Creator, he would be most cold not to share this meaning and value. We must conclude that a loving God reveals himself. Our next question deals with the specifics of his revelation. Naturally, we cannot place limitations on God's mode or style. We should rid ourselves of ultimatums like the following. Well, if God has something to say to me, let him contact me at exactly 2 a.m., wake me up from my bed, he must appear in my living room, he must in fact be on the TV screen, and he has to look exactly like George Burns. Okay, my friend, is God obligated to accommodate our peculiar expectations? Not at all. God can communicate any way he chooses. It may be with an audible voice, but he could also use telepathy, dreams, visions, prophets, feelings, all of the above or none of the above. Remember, we are not inventing the rules. We would also assume that if the Creator is revealing himself to people, he has always been revealing himself to people. This is very important. Let me say that again. If the Creator is revealing himself to people, he has always been revealing himself to people. For this, too, would be the only consistent act of love. I'm quite suspicious of the lone prophet who claims to be the first person to ever encounter God. Such partiality would be quite unfair to the billions who've been around since the beginning of time. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539. WNS Electric.
Looking for a book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
biblical evidence for the existence of a God and strong philosophical evidence that this God is loving. Well, if he's loving, there are certain things a loving God would do, and there are certain things a loving God would not do. And before the break, I said a loving God would speak. Now, it's amazing. There are some other radio talk show hosts who I admire very much, very religious. They defend Christianity. They defend Judaism. And yet I've heard them say, well, if somebody claimed God actually talked to them directly, that would be kind of bizarre. And yet they claim they believe in the Bible. The Bible is written by people who claim God spoke to them directly. A few of them were witnesses to divine activity, but most of them were claiming to have actually heard from God. And that's what a loving God would do. Why is it so bizarre to think of God speaking? We can speak. Can we do something our Creator can't do? And if he speaks, if he's capable of speaking, and he created us for a purpose, why wouldn't he tell us what that purpose is? But then we moved on and said, if he's been speaking, he's always been speaking, because if he just started speaking in the 21st century, wouldn't that be so unfair to everybody who's been alive throughout history up to now? With all due respect, we have just eliminated most religions from consideration because we're disregarding all new ones. Only ancient religions are still in the running, provided they give claim to revelation as far back as human history can be traced. But there must be more than a claim. It makes sense that people would keep records of such divine activity. God's intervention, generation after generation after generation, could hardly escape notice, for it would have influenced history in dramatic and powerful ways. A collection of 39 ancient manuscripts that we call the Old Testament or the Tanakh makes such a claim. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam all adhere to the Old Testament. The scriptures of Hinduism and Native American traditions are examples, although not exclusive examples, of alternative divine claims that also point to antiquity. Well, Bob, if God is willing to speak with everyone, why are there so many different religions? Do they each present the same truth, but in a different fashion? If so, Jesus would not be the only way. Okay, we are moving now into the question of consistency. And that's another one on my list. A loving God would be consistent. Now, it would help to start with a teaching of the ancient philosopher Aristotle. I'm referring to his law of non-contradiction. This is foundational if you ever have taken a philosophy class. This law states that two given truth claims must not contradict. If they do, at least one of them is wrong, and possibly they are both wrong. In other words, I can't call my wife on the phone and say, I'm coming home for dinner, and yet I am not coming home for dinner. Now, does that sound simple? It should, because we accept this idea without hesitation in every facet of life. Every facet of life except religion, that is. People are usually afraid to test religions out of fear that they will be showing intolerance. It should be noted that one can respect freedom of religion without assuming that all religions are equally valid, for such a conclusion is intellectually dishonest. While lecturing at the University of Minnesota, the noted apologist Cliff Konecny was confronted by a student who claimed that all religions were basically the same. Cliff responded with a piercing analogy. He said, if I were to assume that all Chinese people were the same, it would mean one of two things. Either I'm a bigot, or I have not taken the time to get to know Chinese people. The same is true of religious assumptions. Even when admitting that religions do, in fact, teach opposite theologies, many stubbornly grasp the idea that somehow every one of them came from the same God. Why is it so easy to envision a creator who unveils contradictory information? Why must a belief in God be divorced from our God-given ability to think? Paradoxically, people are not afraid to put Christianity through the ringer. Its claims are confronted all the time. Once I was doing an open forum at Fresno State College, I was asked about Mormonism. I mentioned that Mormonism claimed to go by the Bible, yet taught polytheism, the belief in more than one God, which completely contradicts the Bible. Isaiah 43:10 says, I alone am God. Before me, no God existed, neither shall be any after. Oh, a young lady was very perturbed. She raised her hand. She said, what right do you have to stand here and scrutinize somebody else's religion? I said, hold on.
For the last 2 hours, you and your friends have been doing nothing but scrutinizing my religion. Doesn't the Bible contradict itself? How do we know Jesus rose from the dead? Why would a loving God send people to hell, etc., etc.? I said, this has not bothered me. It has been very appropriate. We're out at a college campus. You should challenge anyone who makes a truth claim. But make no mistake, it works both ways. I will ask these same questions of other religions. She nodded. As her double standard became obvious, her earlier skeptical questions confirmed an honest, inward conviction that all beliefs, even religious ones, must be examined. We must test whether they contradict themselves. We must test whether they contradict each other. Now, there isn't time right now to give every major religion its rightful day in court, but a few brief examples will at least illustrate the process. Some Hindus believe that God and creation are one and the same. The Bible, on the other hand, paints a major distinction between the creation and the creator. If one person says God made the tree, while another one says actually God is the tree, you cannot possibly conclude that they are both correct, even though they each use a similar word, God. Of course, this leads us to no conclusion at all about the accuracy of Hinduism or Christianity, as it is instead a conclusion about the fallacy of universalism, the belief that all religions are true. On the other hand, Hinduism makes no claims to historical verification, like Christianity does, and this is a significant thing to know. There are also contradictions between religions which accept the Bible. Islam, I mentioned, accepts not only the Quran, it accepts the Old Testament, it also accepts the New. A lot of people don't know that. They think they believe in the Quran as some kind of alternative to the Bible. But they accept both the Old and New Testament as the Word of God. Now, Jesus is described in the Quran as a holy prophet, but not an incarnation of God himself. We'll get back to this when we return. Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church.
Skyline Church.
A loving God would do would communicate, but if he's been doing that, he's been communicating since the beginning of time. And he didn't just start communicating in the 21st century, because that would be unfair to all the people that lived before. So we're looking at ancient religions, and some people say, well, they're all basically teaching the same thing. They are not all teaching the same thing. Like I said, Hindu says God is the universe. A Christian says God made the universe. Those are diametrically different views of God. And then even religions like Islam, which claim that they accept the Quran and the Old and the New Testament. Well, in the Quran, they say Jesus was a prophet of God, but he wasn't God. Okay, but they also claim they accept the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, the test for a prophet is that he must be accurate in everything he teaches. That's found in Deuteronomy 18. And then they also accept the New Testament. In the New Testament, Jesus taught that he was God. John 14. If Jesus was lying, he was not a prophet. But Islam claims he was a prophet. On the other hand, if Jesus was telling the truth when he claimed to be God, then he is God. But Islam claims he wasn't God. Either way, we have a rather serious contradiction. Now, what about Judaism? As you know, I was raised Jewish myself, so these days anybody that criticizes Judaism gets accused of being anti-Semitic. Won't work here, pal. I'm Jewish myself. Jewish Christian, but Jewish nevertheless. But let me talk about Judaism. Judaism teaches that the old covenant will be changed after the Messiah comes. That's predicted in Jeremiah 31. Daniel 9 actually computes that time by measuring the amount in Hebrew years of 30 days each. He starts with the return of the Jews from Persian exile when King Artaxerxes freed the Jewish slaves, and he ends with the Messiah's arrival. This day occurred on Nisan 10, according to the Persian calendar, or March 30th, 33 AD, according to the Julian calendar. Only one potential Messiah rode into Jerusalem that day, Jesus of Nazareth. If he was the Messiah, then Judaism's new covenant, otherwise known as Christianity, which means follower of the Messiah, that covenant is now in force. If he wasn't the Messiah, then Daniel was a false prophet. But Judaism considers Daniel to be a true prophet. We have found a contradiction with Judaism as well. Now, I must be making myself very unpopular right now. Please understand, I do respect the many Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Mormons, Universalists, and others. I've met them. They're honest and dedicated people. This does not keep me, however, from examining their claims. But Bob, is Christianity any more consistent? It seems there are many contradictions in the Bible. Well, that's a whole discussion in itself, one I've had before, one I'll have again. It does seem that way. We must remember that the Bible was written in other languages, Hebrew and Greek, by cultures far removed from ours. Most of these alleged so-called contradictions stem from a misunderstanding of certain terms and phrases. Let me give you just one example. I could give you many. I'm going to just give you one, though, to make the point. Jesus predicted he would be in the grave for 3 days and three nights. Now, when we read the Passion narratives, we see that he was crucified late Friday afternoon and that he rose from the dead early on Sunday morning. It is impossible to get 3 days and three nights out of this. And I've seen many atheists refer to Jesus' prophecy as a blatant error, which completely destroys the credibility of the Bible. But my friends, the solution comes with an understanding of the way ancient Jews spoke. To a Jew, any part of a day was viewed as a whole day. That's the way they described it. Describing part of a day as a day and a night may seem foreign to us, but that is because we live 2,000 years later in a completely different culture. We must realize that if the Bible did not contradict itself to the original audience it was written for, it cannot contradict itself to us. That's only one example of many apparent Bible contradictions that melt away in light of authentic historical interpretation. But Bob, the Old and New Testament are very different. Isn't that a contradiction too? No, because once again, the Old Testament predicts the New. The consistency we expect is not in the quantity of information, but in the accuracy of the facts. For example, if Susan has a vision in which God says, I love corporate worship. And Ron has a vision in which God says, I love private worship. It is possible that both parties received an authentic vision. God may like both. But supposing Susan heard God say, I hate corporate worship, while Ron heard, I love corporate worship. Now somebody is on the wrong frequency. At least one person did not have a true encounter. After all, God is not schizophrenic. Likewise, if God had warned the Hebrews to never expect another covenant from him, then any prophet who claimed to institute a new agreement between God and man would be immediately labeled as false. But instead, God said through Jeremiah, "Behold, the days are coming when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not like the covenant I made with their forefathers." Well, if there's only one God who reveals himself, then how do we account for the differences in people's beliefs? A loving God would be a gentleman. He would not force himself upon those who don't want him, but would instead speak to those who are seeking. Most people accept the religion they were brought up in without question. Others, when choosing a religion, choose the one they like or the one that is convenient. Sometimes, like sheep, they are mesmerized by talented orators who speak with charisma and authority. We have only to recall the 900 unfortunate individuals who followed Jim Jones into the wilderness, a man claiming to be God, and then they all committed suicide. We have only to remember that to remember that most become religious simply to have their needs and feelings satiated. Seldom, if ever, do they say, "I will examine the evidence to see which, if any, of these religions is actually true." But Bob, disproving another religion doesn't prove Christianity. Neither does the harmonization of an alleged Bible contradiction prove the Bible. That is true. For that reason, let us see what we should expect from an accurate religion, and let's compare Christianity accordingly. First of all, the religion will go hand in hand with our own conscience. We started with the conscience, we go back to it. This means that God will someday somehow hold people accountable for the way they live. If he didn't, he would not be a just God. And our conscience tells us we're answering to a just God. Justice is certainly one quality of goodness. This introduces an immediate problem, though. I'm referring, of course, to our universal guilt. Since nobody lives a righteous life, nobody lives according to their conscience 100%. Our divine judge will have to condemn us all, or will he? Nobody seems to be able to completely submit to the conscience. People are apparently trapped. Would there be no mercy for the woman who cries for release? Would there be no hope for the victim who hates his wicked nature and desires change? Mercy is never an obligation, but mercy is still a sophisticated quality found within the imperfect human. Again, would people have a worthy quality that God doesn't have? How can a loving God execute justice and mercy at the same time? How might he deliver people from the shackles of their own deadly selfishness? This is not an easy question to answer, but an accurate religion will address the puzzle. As you know, when the gospel came forth, it was addressed. On the cross, Jesus paid for our sins. Sin had to be paid for, justice and mercy combined. This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Conscience tells us how we should behave. Our conscience also tells us that we're not behaving the way we should. And our awareness that a conscience comes from God makes it a strong possibility that this God is going to hold us accountable. But would this God not also reveal some kind of mercy? If we have this nature that at times is just incapable of obeying the conscience, somehow we're in a trap that we need to get out of. Now, that's as far as we can go philosophically. The philosopher would say, I would expect a God to not only explain how he's just, but explain how he's going to be merciful. Of course, that the information that comes in the theology of the Bible tells us that this takes place on the cross because Jesus paid for our sins. Imagine you were in a courtroom and you had committed some crime, but you seem very penitent and you seem to want to change. And the judge says, okay, are you sorry about what you did? And you say, yes. He says, well, okay, $100,000 has to be paid. Otherwise, you need to go to jail. And you don't have $100,000. But he says, I'll tell you what. If you promise me you'll never do this again, I'm going to take mercy on you. The justice still has to be met, but he takes out his checkbook and writes out a check for $100,000. Says, take this to the cashier, and you can go. Now, you think, well, that sounds too good to be true. Well, mercy is too good to be true. But that's exactly what Jesus did for you on the cross. But again, that's theology that we see in the Bible. What we've been doing up to now is philosophy that just says we should be looking. Our conscience tells us we should be looking for a God like that. So we're trying to find a theology that matches the philosophy. Now, another place that our philosophy takes us to, we would also expect, as God reveals himself, some religious teachings concerning life and death. The person who claims that death is final has a hard time supporting his remark. If death were final, God would be cruel. I say this for the simple reason that all people cherish a pleasant, enjoyable life. Who could ever wish for such contentment to end? It would have been less evil for God to abort his plan of creation than to put us here with a love for life and then pull the plug, consigning us to oblivion without ever again having even a conscious thought. Yeah, but Bob, some people are glad to die. Suffering in the world makes life miserable. Granted. But these people would have preferred a fulfilling life. Otherwise, they would not view suffering as tragic. Even the person who commits suicide will do so because of depression or some tragedy he or she couldn't cope with. A tired, weak, sick old woman might prefer death over her condition, but if it were possible, She would much rather be rejuvenated to experience once again the health and energy of her youth. The fact that we even die at all is certainly a mystery, along with the origin of evil, but apparently people were not meant to die. Death is a slap in the face, a final disaster. A loving God will provide some kind of solution for our sick world, a remedy that overcomes death. All forms of evil must someday be destroyed. What is only a hope to us is a future certainty to God. Yeah, but that doesn't prove the Christian belief in resurrections. There are other ideas about life after death, like reincarnation, for instance. My friend, reincarnation offers no hope. Let me say that again. Reincarnation offers no hope from any honest, practical perspective. If I am a reincarnated soul, I am completely unaware of my other lives. This means that should I die and come back again, my future identity will be without a knowledge of this life. As Bob Segal, I perceive my present state as all that I know and love. If this should end, how can I receive consolation? My future existence as a new man or new woman who does not remember Bob Segal will be, for all intents and purposes, another person. How does this so-called hope compared to the promise of living for all of eternity as the same person? The possibility of reincarnation becomes highly questionable, especially in relationship to a caring creator. Yeah, but maybe there's another important reason for reincarnation, more important than our ability to remember our previous lives. Maybe people are continually changing for the better each time they return. Oh, our species has had a long time to evolve. Show me the improvement. People are just as horrid and corrupt now as they were 5,000 years ago. As mentioned earlier, some of the worst atrocities were committed in the 20th century and 21st century. According to the suggestion of reincarnation, we have each completed thousands of lives. When will there be something to show for it? Well, some people claim to remember their past identities. Yeah, some people claim to have received three magic wishes from a genie, too. A rational improbability does not instantly change simply because of a claimed experience. It's now time to tie up the loose ends. What exactly are we looking for? An ancient religion with historical claims to consistent revelation from God. This God is both just and merciful. He will offer a deliverance from sin to those who crave such freedom. People who are content in their sin will still be held accountable. Along with this salvation, God will provide an explanation for evil in the world apart from his own activity. Finally, God will offer everlasting life in a paradise society free from corruption. In other words, we are looking for a God who shares the gospel. Well, that takes us right to the end of our program. What a fitting note to end on. I will see you next week.
Bob Segal Show, sponsored by Bob Segal.